Welcome to TBP Talks, the Blogger Programs podcast. I'm your host, Olivia Kate, and this is your dose of influencer trends, current topics, industry events, and all things millennial. We will be getting up close and personal with some of the blogger industry's most renowned influencers, experts, and thought leaders. We hope to give you all the tips and tricks that you need to nail the world of influence. Good morning and welcome to TBP Talks. This is episode 3 of the Blogger Programs podcast, and today's episode is a rather special one as I'm joined by our CEO and founder of the Blogger Program, Byron Rawlings. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Well, welcome to TBP Talks. Thank you for being a part of it. We wanted to feature you on our podcast today to hear about your journey from startup to scale up and all the behind the scenes moments that you've experienced to get you where you are today in your career. So let's rewind. Let's go right back to the start. Let's say when you were 16, 17, you finished education. What was your first ever job and what was it back then that you wanted to do as a career?
Well, I don't think I ever had a dream or a career that path I wanted to take. I think my mum and dad have always been quite entrepreneurial. My dad had a business himself, and so did my mum. So I think I've always had that element built and ingrained into me. My first ever job, when I was 15, 16, I was actually set up my own business then. So I was basically built my own website from scratch, and I was going out, and it was a football website, and I was creating a password which users needed to collect in order to make transfers on a website. This is before users of the internet were regular, so it was all into a newspaper. So I used to get up at about, 5 a.m, run to the shop, come back, collect the password, put it online, then users could come and get that password without having to go to the shop to buy a paper. So that's my first ever, wasn't really a job, but the first thing I ever did, which was quite entrepreneurial.
So yeah, it's fair to say that you've always had an entrepreneurial streak since a young age.
And while most people were in bed at 5 a.m, I was up running down to a paper shop to collect the password to put it up before anyone else.
And was the football element because you loved football?
I love football, yeah. It's a passion of mine. But unfortunately, things turned digital, and then they didn't need necessarily to put into a newspaper, which meant that my business come to an abrupt, abrupt end.
Yeah. So what was your next move after that?
So I fell into chefing randomly.
Oh, wow.
I picked up a summer job after I finished sixth form, which was done in business studies, picked up a job in a pub. Food pub, and it went from there really. Within probably 12, 18 months, I was heading up a kitchen of about 10 at, like, you know, I was only 17 at the time, or 16.
Wow.
So there's adults and stuff. So 2 days a week, I'd run the kitchen.
Did you fall in love with food, or what was it that made you want to go into being a chef?
I guess at the time, it, being brutally honest, was the cash.
Yeah.
It was good, it was very well paid. I obviously learned a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that it wasn't going to be my long-term job. I couldn't see myself at 30 to 40 years old working weekends and
unsociable hours.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And I did that for a couple of years, from about 17 to 19, I think.
How did you find it managing such a big group of people at such a young age?
Well, it wasn't easy.
No.
Especially being quite young as well. But I think the fact that I'm pretty organised, and I think I'm quite good at managing people in terms of, I don't dictate, I like to be collaborative, and I think the other chefs liked me. So that helped, especially in a male-dominant environment.
Definitely.
So it definitely put me through my paces early on, having to kind of manage that. It's food, and it's all about timing and getting good quality stuff out. So I guess I learned about being organised and delivering things to a high standard at very early age. But I did that for a couple of years full time. And actually, one of the other chefs there, he went away. He went travelling by himself, and that kind of inspired me then to do something similar. So I did that for 2 years, and then I decided to move on. I randomly booked a one-way ticket to Australia.
Wow.
I had a couple of mates out there who'd just gone out, and just took a backpack.
So you left the chefing behind and went travelling. Was it on your own?
So we had a couple of friends out there in Australia. So they were in Sydney already. One-way ticket, I think about £2,000 in my back pocket. And arrived in Sydney, into a hostel, and then that was that.
And how did you find it? It must have been so different from a demanding full-time job to then suddenly having sort of no real cares in the world.
Yes, it was very, it was completely different.
Yeah.
Going from, you know, working 60 hours a week in a hot, stuffy kitchen to not having a job and being able to go to the beach every day.
Oh.
But it was also challenging. So we were in Australia for about 12 months. Apart from a few big cities, we camped the whole way. So it was completely different. And we had to work our way around. So there were some very tough times out in Australia where you know, we had no money. And I think I spent a month planting strawberries just to kind of make sure I had enough food to pay for my tent spot.
Wow.
And picking avocados. And
but again, yeah, such a life lesson, I can imagine.
I think it is, yeah. I would encourage anybody to go out and have an experience traveling.
What other countries did you explore?
Well, we spent 12 months in Australia and I spent a month in Thailand. I've since traveled a few other places like Brazil and Sri Lanka and places like that, but I guess this was probably 10 years ago now, so it's before the kind of culture of people finishing and going. It wasn't so accessible then,
yeah,
you know. The life lessons you learn about appreciating money and looking up, fending for yourself, it was hand to mouth some days, and doing anything for work just to get by.
Yeah.
As a bunch of us, and we had a car, and it would break down, and it was all the dramas,
yeah,
you can imagine.
You could write
in
a book,
the desert,
I'm sure.
And stuff. Yeah, it was a life changing experience, I guess, that I went through for those 12 or 13 months.
And then what did you do once you came home from traveling?
I think one of my memories coming back was I came back with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So I spent,
and when you say back, where were you living at the time?
I didn't have anywhere.
Okay.
So my mum lives down in Bristol with my family down there, but my base is in Norwich or Norfolk.
Okay.
So I came back to Norfolk, and actually went to move into my dad's place. And I remember coming back, I had, you know, long blonde hair and a really tanned body, and I had a guitar and all that kind of stuff. And I remember sitting into a room that they let me use, and it was a single bed, and it was one of the children's rooms. It was all pink, covered in teddies. And I sat there and I thought, I've just come back from the most amazing,
yeah,
13 months of my life, and I sat there by myself, and it's in a village, you know, half an hour out of Norwich. And I just thought, wow, what a
difference.
And actually, I had literally had no money, had no car, I had to start from scratch.
And that must have been a real struggle.
It was. I think going from the freedom that you have to then being into a household again with children, and I've actually got to earn some money. And
there's always rules in a house, isn't
exactly,
there? You know.
Yeah. I think I worked in a local steam museum for a couple of months, just in the cafes there. But then I soon found my feet, and
okay,
then moved into a house with one of my closest friends up into Norwich, where again I moved back into chefing for a short period of time. So I knew that it was something that I didn't want to do long term, but I needed to find some money,
mm-hmm,
and pay the rent and that kind of stuff. So I worked for a local pub in Norwich, but I did that for 5 days a week, and I actually managed it myself. But on the back of that, I then went 1 day a week to college.
Okay.
To do some business studies. So I, again, was moving towards the business side. And I think I did that for probably 18 months, 2 years, something like that. And then the course that I was doing wasn't going to be completed at the college, so I had to make a choice. Either I finish it and don't bother completing it, or pack up and go to university. So I, me being me, packed up and got my stuff and went to join mid-year, the second year at university.
Oh, wow. What university did you go to?
Went to Derby.
Nice. And where? What did you study?
Graphic design.
Okay.
Even though I didn't really want to be a graphic designer, it was in the design field. I mean, I've got a pretty good eye for it.
Did you say you're quite a creative person?
Well, I don't know. Subject to... I think I can be.
Yeah.
I think I've definitely got an eye for things like photography and a good design.
Surely as well, it goes back to the intricacy of, you know, designing food and your chef background. Maybe it was that sort of design element.
Yeah. And my dad had a, you know, when he was young, had a design agency. And my mum used to be an artist. So I think...
Oh, it's definitely in your background then, yeah.
Yeah, ingrained in myself to be a... Not maybe creative is probably the best term, not an artist myself.
And did you enjoy the degree?
It was a real struggle.
Okay.
So obviously having my friends and some family down in Norwich, I think I was maybe 23, 24, moved to Derby by myself. And again, my dad took me up there and I went into halls. So I was in the second year, mid-second year, and I didn't know anybody. And obviously the first years are in the halls and they've all got their bunch of mates and friends and that kind of stuff. So it was a real, it's probably one of the most challenging year and a half I've been through, because I don't know if anyone knows Derby, but it's not, Derby's not like a huge place. And going in without any friends was a challenge. The course itself was good.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot, but it was a difficult 18 months to get through up in Derby.
And then what did you do once you graduated?
So after graduation, I guess this is where my career essentially, or my actual career started.
Yeah.
So I got offered a job from a friend who actually owns two clothing companies. And he offered me a role to come in and head up the marketing there. I've been doing a bit of freelance stuff for him in the past. And he's already got a fairly well established clothing company now, and he wanted to set up a new one at the time. So I came back and he offered me to move in with him, and he lived in a penthouse, so it was very different from my student accommodation.
Yeah.
And he was a good friend, and we both have, you know, both are good friends to this day still, so it was a perfect opportunity for me. So I came back and we basically set up a new clothing brand from scratch.
Oh, fantastic.
I think I probably learnt the most I've learned during that couple of years working with him, purely because it was just me and him setting this new company up.
Yeah.
So we were doing everything. So
was it online clothing or an actual boutique?
No, it was all online.
Okay.
So, and we started from scratch. So we did the website together. We did, it was mental. We were doing the picking and packing of the products. We were doing the photos, so I was modeling, he was modeling.
Oh, brilliant. So you were doing everything,
styling the clothes, customer services, email marketing, the social,
so many
pretty
elements,
pretty much everything.
And did you enjoy working in fashion?
It was maybe not fashion, but online.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the social media side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where that led me to my next path. I learned a lot, just in terms of how to manage a business, customers, what, you know, there's so many factors you don't think about when you're setting up a business, you know, the tax, VAT, all this kind of stuff. So you learn a whole lot about it. And I think we did a pretty good job between us. I mean, he's now grown that on since. I think when I started, it was just me and him. And when I left, there was probably 15, 20 people around that. I'm not 100% sure, but it grown to a nice, you know, head of buying, had proper photographers in, had a full studio. So it gone, you know, from when we started, just me and him, you know, in the studio together, to where it had taken it. It was amazing, really, in that 2 years.
And did you ever have a mentor along the way, or was it really you were learning on the spot?
Both of us were learning on the spot. We brought in some freelancers to do bits and pieces, but we both were learning as we went along. And I think that's one of the things which is probably most challenging about being a single founder.
Yeah.
You don't have anybody else to work with, and it's, you know, you look at co-founders, they've got each other to bounce ideas off, and having two businesses, it can be quite a lonely time if you don't have someone to really
that understands.
Yeah. And I think I'll talk about my first company, which I set up shortly, but I could talk to my dad around that because it's a similar size, and I mean, he didn't understand everything about the business, but I could at least talk to him about, you know, the things I was going through and he'd experienced them. But looking at Blogger Program, it took it to a new level.
Definitely.
And I've got an advisor now and a mentor now, which is the best thing that's ever happened to me. But up until that point, it can be quite a lonely place to work through.
And was it when you were at the fashion company that you then started to work with bloggers and influencers and realized it was a path that maybe you wanted to go down?
Yeah. It was. So I don't know what year it was now, but it was 5 or 6 years ago, where part of our marketing was to work with influencers or bloggers at the time. That's what they were called. What we were doing is giving them shopping vouchers to pick products they like. We would box them up and then ship them out, and they would create at the time blog content and YouTube content. And some of these people had hundreds of thousands of followers, and they would charge us nothing or a few hundred dollars, so, or pounds. So it was really very early on that we started to do that. But the way we were doing it is, I would find them, I would contact them, I'd negotiate what we were doing. Then
how would you find them? Was it online? Just, you would search through, yeah, scroll Facebook. Through Instagram, Facebook. Yeah, yeah,
I don't think Instagram was even running at that
point.
Oh
wow!
It was blogs. We were looked at blogs and YouTube. Found them. Yeah, it was just manual, all manual ourselves. Okay. And then I would get the stuff picked and packed by the team, and they would give me a packing slip, and the packing slip would be what I worked off. So I would then keep them packing slips on my desk, had a wad of, you know, a couple of inches, and then I'd have to go through their web blogs and the names, wow, and stuff, and actually manually check if the content had been uploaded. And that's, I think that's, yeah, the probably the first point at which I knew that there was something in it. I think I'm very grateful to Adam, who set up Love Clothing and let me work there. He also knew that I was more ambitious and wanted to do something myself, and he allowed me the freedom to, during my time with him, spend a couple of mornings every week and every afternoon to go into one of the rooms and set up my own business. So it was, he let me, you know, spread my wings, yeah, if you like. Otherwise I was doing it in my spare time, and, you know, after work and weekends and things like that. And that's where I then started my first company, official company, called Social Network Solutions, and I set that up, and that's been going for probably about 6 or 7 years now.
Okay, so tell us, what is Social Network Solutions?
It basically is a social media agency, and yep, we create content and distribute it for brands, predominantly smaller brands. I mean, when we started, it's crazy, really. We I was based in Norwich, and I've actually employed my whole family at some point. Some of the oldest are seven. My mum still works for the company.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Unfortunately, had to fire the rest over a period of time.
I won't ask why.
No, we did it as nicely as possible. but it was me, and I needed, so I was doing it in my spare time, and we were obviously creating content for brands, and I was posting the content and trying to grow the followers. But at the time, it's my weekends and evenings. So the first person I employed was my mum, and she was creating content. Then, you know, my sisters joined, and my brothers, and they were seven. So they all,
oh, wow,
they all joined, and we set up a small office in Bristol. And we grew it.
And how did you come up with the idea of content creation in the first place? Was it something that...
Well, it was something I was doing for Love Clothing at the time. And I grew... So we grew Love Clothing from 0 to 80,000 very quickly. So I knew I had a knack for it. And I just started offering it for different brands and myself. And people... You know, this is 6, 7 years ago. People were you know, exploring social media, and it was very easy for me to bring clients on. So we did that. And then we were just, at the time, we were just creating static images, no video stuff, no influencer stuff. It was just creating pure static content for brands. Luckily, I set up, we did set up a network of community pages. So these are pages where we could share our content across, and we've got some in the millions of followers. So we could take our brands and we could, you know, share their content across a network of pages, run competitions, things like that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was good. It was early on in social media, so we were kind of one of the first companies to be doing that. And then I realised I was in Norwich, and this was in Bristol, so I had to move it to Norwich once I left Love Clothing and set it up myself. And I worked out of my bedroom for probably 6 months or so, and found a space in Norwich, and we could then migrate the business up this end. And it was tough because my family had been in Bristol and I'd employed them all, and I had to slowly migrate the business. You know, you have to make business decisions.
And how did you cope with setbacks?
I think you just become not immune to it, but you kind of get a strong backbone, and you have to roll your sleeves up. There's setbacks every day. We were chatting earlier on, the emotional roller coaster you go through running not just one but two businesses is you can't prepare for it.
No.
Every day there's a setback, but I think we're at a stage now where there's enough winning things that are happening to outweigh those. But you still have to just roll your sleeves up and look for a solution. I think that's one of the things we're ingrained for here at Blogger Program, is let's look for a solution everything we do, rather than coming up with a problem. How can we come back with a solution for it?
Absolutely. So talking of the Blogger Program, what then inspired you to start TBP?
Well,
big question.
So I was set up. So as SNS started to grow, we got ourselves to about 15 employees in Norwich, and so I had a good base of about 100 companies we were working with. Looking back at the work I was doing at Love Clothing with the influencer stuff, I could see there was a market for it. I could see that there was going to grow. So I basically put a kind of plan together. I outsourced some designs to a chap in Scotland, and my development out to Colombia. Luckily, we're not with them anymore. So basically we built a mini website. And I wanted to find a solution that was a better way for brands to source influencers or bloggers at the time and communicate to them or manage their collaborations. I didn't ever know it was going to scale to the size it is, but I just knew that we needed some kind of platform, I guess, to house it. So we designed this website. And then in Norwich, there's quite a good hub of influencers, actually. And I knew a couple from my days at Love Clothing, so I approached them to come and work alongside me to help grow it. So we brought a couple of people in, and they came up with a strategy to help bring influencers into the platform. I already had a network of brands, so I had 100 brands or so that were sitting there as part of SNS. But I just didn't have the influencers. So what we did is we set up a number of campaigns, events and things like that, all with no budget. We did it for free, basically. But I used the influencers to ask their influencers or followers or friends to come into our platform. And it went from there. We did such simple things at the time, like YouTube unboxings.
Yeah.
And we used
They were really popular, weren't they?
Yeah, I think we were one of the first people to really use it. So we would invite lots of brands for free to contribute to these gift boxes, and had good brands in it, and we'd send them out to 10 or 15 YouTubers, and they would say to their followers, who are naturally influencers themselves, come and join TBP, and you could work with these brands. And very quickly the platform scaled, and we had lots of influencers join. I think we're now about 40,000 self-registered, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was using the resources that I had in Norwich at my disposal on the budget we had.
And what have been the most important tools in helping you grow the community? I mean, what would you say is the most sort of challenging thing about setting up a scalable company?
Oh, that's a difficult question. Well, I think the network the industry that we're in terms of you know, a kind of self-serve platform, if you like, you've got to have the, you know, the actual influencers in on the platform. And you know, I think we're very lucky at the time that we were probably one of the first to market, and we used the resources we had. If it was going to happen now, I think it's a challenge.
Yeah.
I think we're just using what we had around us, and using influencers to help promote us at the time was the key to growing that.
And is there one thing you wish you'd known before you started in influencer marketing? Because it is an industry that has just escalated.
Yeah, nobody could have predicted where it's got to. You know, you look at it 4 or 5 years ago and it was, you could have never imagined the scale and the money that's being spent on it now. If I'd have known it was gonna go, like, you know, as big as it had done, I'd have probably maybe accelerated ourselves a bit earlier on. But it's just, you know, it'd been a risk then without knowing. So I don't know what else we could have done really at the time.
So how did the blogger program end up in London, where it is today, from Norwich?
As the platform started to gain recognition and we grew in terms of number of influencers and brands using it, we got approached by our partners, True Capital, who came down and saw us, liked what we were doing, and offered to help scale us, which... at the time, everything was mine. It was, you know, SNS and TBP. So we met up with the guys from True. I thought they could help scale us to a new level. I think looking at my ambition, where I wanted to take it, I saw an opportunity. So I split the two companies up. So SNS is its own entity, and that works out of Norwich now. And then we took TBP and moved it to London as a separate entity. Again, I found myself alone in London, over in Victoria. So I based myself there, and we then looked to recruit and build a team. We're sitting at now about, I think, 25 people. We've got our own office in Covent Garden. The business is doing really well. But it was being able to separate yourself from your comfort zone and pushing your boundaries again, I think that's what I did, and that's where we are here today. And we've got a fantastic platform with, like I said, 40,000 influencers registered, and we've got incredibly good, you know, account management team, and we're working with some of the biggest clients globally now. So considering where it started from blank bits of paper on my mate's desk to as an idea to where we are now, sometimes you need to take a step back to look at,
to realize.
I think people often say to me, "Hey, do you ever kind of think about what you've done?" I don't.
No.
Because you're so engrossed in it on a day-to-day basis. But little things like, we've got our own neon sign in the office, things like that, you just think,
I mean, that's the best.
It's cool, right? You know, got our own, you know, we've got lots of our own marketing material now and stuff. And you don't, you know, we're now doing our own podcasts. We host some of the biggest influencer events at Fashion Week. So kind of, you know,
when you really
happens.
Think about, how much it's grown.
You know, we've now got 25 of us, you know, in the office and growing. The brands that we work with and the strategies we're setting out for some of the biggest retailers in the UK, you don't think about it, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So taking a step back is sometimes quite nice.
Definitely. And what would you say has been the toughest moment in your professional life so far? I know it's a big question, but it can go right back to your days as a chef to Love Clothing. What has been a real tough moment for you? I know you've mentioned, you know, you felt alone in certain situations. Would you say that could be a factor?
The toughest moment. That's a tough question. Probably now actually.
Me asking you that question.
I don't know really. There's always challenges, you know, ups and downs, you know, whether it's someone leaving, whether it's losing a deal, whether it's, it's hard for me to put an answer on my actual toughest moment. So I don't really know.
Maybe managing us lot.
No, I mean, you guys, I think one of the things that I got told or I guess mentored fairly early on was to try and make yourself as a CEO redundant. And that may seem like a strange thing to say, but actually the hardest thing to do as a founder is to let go. It's really hard to let go of something that you've built and designed and created yourself.
And actually delegate to other people.
Let people go and make their own decisions. Mm. And it took me a while to actually do that, actually. I think, you know, I remember having meetings where I think people, and probably rightly so, I was being too controlling and not wanting to let people go and do their own thing. I'm trying to be a complete opposite of that now. I think we let the team express themselves and, you know, I mean, I'd have no involvement in any kind of the social content that goes out and this kind of stuff we're doing now. I let you guys and the team
run. I mean, don't
worry,
I'll let you hear the edit of this before.
But I think that was probably one of the biggest challenges mm. is to let go of the baby that I created and let people go and run their own course. And I like to think now that happens. That's definitely one of my challenges, I think, that I had to go through.
And on the flip side, what's the most uplifting memory you've got from your career so far?
There's many, actually. I think I got asked this question the other day. It's difficult because there's quite a few. It's hard to pinpoint one moment where I think that was the moment.
Yeah.
There's lots of small wins along the way. I think things like having the success that we have at our events at Fashion Week. I think some just taking a step back and realizing what we've achieved, having brands, you know, subscribe to our platform, that's always been the dream.
Yeah.
And to have brands, big brands, come in, use it and pay to use it, it validates. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's what I've been trying to build for.
It's a real achievement.
5 years or so. Yeah. So lots of little wins along the way. It's quite hard to pick one moment that I would say this is the moment, but all these little things taking a step back, I think that's you know, they combine to make one great achievement.
No, I bet that's great. And last question, because I know you're a busy man and you have a company to run, what is the best business advice you've ever received?
I think it's going back to, for me personally, and as a founder and stuff, it is being able to let go.
Yeah.
Without, if I didn't have that advice, then we wouldn't be where we are today. I'd have still been running the social media posts or that kind of stuff. So I think that's one thing that stands out in my memory, saying, you need to make, and I'm not redundant, I'm still very busy within the business, but making yourself as redundant, bringing in people that are so much better than me at their jobs, that has to be the advice that I got given. And I think without the team that we've got here today and me being able to let go, we wouldn't be able to be where we are. So I think the combination of those helped.
Well, I think that's a great time to wrap up. Thank you so much for featuring on TBP Talks. Have you enjoyed yourself?
That's very good, thank you. Looking forward to hearing it.
Thank you so much for your time. For those listening, that's all for today, but join us again soon for episode 4, which will be an influencer exclusive with William and Henry Wade. Bye.